This is a spiritual reading being given for Erin McGrawty on the 20th of June 2026 in Victoria, Australia by John Rawson. We find ourselves within the rose garden, that is the garden of memory. And Erin, I wish you could be here with me and see this beautiful garden of roses of many colours, pinks, yellows, lilacs, whites. It's just beautiful, stretching away as far as I can see. And I'm brought here, or we're brought here if you like, because the garden of the rose has a very special relationship to you, which we will see shortly. But as we stand here by the fountain in the middle of the garden, or the centre of the garden, the Book of the Soul is given into my hands. And the Book of the Soul is a metaphor. It represents all the incarnations that you have entered into, or your soul has entered into, since it first came into incarnation thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. Now, the Book of the Soul has three features on the cover, that is. When we are allowed to open the cover, we will be allowed to examine certain lives, but we'll focus on the cover, because the cover represents special characteristics of your soul. And the first characteristic of the book is that it's a light blue. It's beautiful, light sky blue colour. And that indicates your connection on a soul level to the spiritual worlds. And it would indicate to me that you've had many incarnations in different spiritual and religious roles. And even when you didn't have an incarnation, where you were, say, a priest or a nun or a yogi or a shaman or something like this, that even then your work, say as an artist, was very spiritually connected. So that means from incarnation to incarnation you will renew your connection to spirit, which makes for, by the way, a difficult first period of life, because the soul is not happy with the physical world. The soul longs for spirit, and it's sort of pushes and pulls and wants to return, and then it remembers why it came and it draws near again. And the body, it took a long time in this incarnation to be adjusted to the needs of the soul. It needed almost a purification process. But that period is finished. In fact, it was completed late last year. And I'm not surprised that you feel that you've entered a new phase of life. Obviously, you have on a physical level, because on the soul level, what astrologers call the progressed moon returned to its natal position. And that completes one lunar cycle. And the purpose of the lunar cycle, is that you experience the whole range of emotions directed into the 12 different areas of your life at this time. And when the moon returns, it returns in your chart actually to the 12th house, which is the house of that which is hidden. And the house of shadow, the house of wounds, and often people who have the moon in this particular place in the chart have a vocation for working with the wounds, the spiritual, psychological, soul wounds of other souls. But it also means that you incarnate in order to heal certain wounds within your own soul. And they are to do with your expression, or the expression of the feminine within your life, relationships with women, particularly your mother, and how you are going to express that nurturing feminine mother archetype within your life as you enter into this next phase. I'll just echo or continue a little bit more on the phase theme, that once the moon returns to its natal position, you enter a 2-year transition period, and that transition period takes you to the completion of a second major cycle. In this case, it's the return of Saturn to its natal position. And for you, that will happen in 2027. And you'll see this come about, first of all, about July, as though something seems to close off, another part of your life ends. But then there's a reconsideration later in the year, as though you reconsider what you were planning to do. But you'll make a final decision, and everything will sort of fall into place in early-ish 2028, probably round about March, I would say. So that you are in this transition period. When the second return happens, it means that you are ready to embark on your life's purpose, the real life's purpose. We'll come back to that, because I want to come back to the Book of the Soul, which is what we're considering. And as I've indicated, the cover has this beautiful light blue quality. It's interesting because I don't think that you had light blue particularly prominent in your aura in the first reading. Perhaps it was in your head or something like that. But now it's actually moved out into the aura, which is interesting. And normally speaking, we would expect that as you grow, that blue will become more and more prominent within the aura, because it is, in a sense, your soul colour. So the soul colour is blue, meaning that the soul originally came into incarnation on a spiritual quest, not so much because it needed or wanted to experience life within the world, but because it was an ambassador for spiritual forces and spiritual energies, who needed a soul, so to speak, to carry those forces and those energies into physical incarnation, so that the consciousness of those souls who were trapped in the spiritual, the physical bodies, could be lightened, and they would be reminded that their home, their real home, was in spirit. So from life to life, we would also see that this, you have this quality of being the ambassador for spirit. And again, it doesn't matter whether you take on a conventional religious form to do that, in this day and age, that probably wouldn't help because of the antagonism towards organized religion. So therefore, I would perceive your ministry, your spiritual ministry, as being almost incognito, something that you don't announce publicly, but which emanates from you as you grow and evolve in this incarnation and penetrates the shells that that people surround themselves with. Blue is a softening color. It dissolves things. It's quite a hard color to handle in the aura because it's hard for that person to put boundaries within their life. We'll come back to that later. Then the next part of the Book of the Soul is that there's a title across the top, and there's a picture, a symbol, in the center of the book. And the symbol shows you stooping over a beautiful rose. You're looking after it, perhaps you're pruning it. I don't think you're pruning it because it would be the wrong time of year for pruning, because it's got a beautiful pink and white variegated rose growing from it. So you're looking after it, and you're in the middle of this garden, as I find that we're in now, that you are surrounded by roses, and your garden has a wall around it, so it's not infinite, which is, thank God for that, because you would indeed need to be God to cope with the infinite number of roses. And the roses really represent human souls. And so this means that your work, your purpose in incarnation, is to tend souls and bring them to flower and express something of that Christ within. And so that there's a third characteristic of the Book of the Soul is a title that appears in golden lettering, and it doesn't come in English, but I can tell you what it means in English. It says the gardener, and that's a very beautiful soul name because it indicates that you were sent originally from the spiritual worlds to be a gardener for souls. And you've chosen teaching at this point in your life as your vocation, and I can't think of a more appropriate vehicle for someone who's a gardener of souls than being a teacher. And as you would know, it's not so much even the content of what we say and teach. It's more the feeling, emotional relationship that we create with students. The opportunity for souls to feel safe and secure and relaxed so that they also can send down roots and begin to grow into that plant, which one day too will flower into a rose. Let's open the Book of the Soul, and it opens to this very incarnation, which is really a good starting point. And here the soul expresses itself. On the right-hand side, it expresses itself in colours, which are the colours of the aura. And I think that your colours have not changed that much, which is interesting because I think you were, oh no, you're about 20, I think, when you had your last reading. So by that stage, the colours should be becoming quite stable. And I will just name them so that Melody can write them down. Start on the or a drawing. But the first color is orange, still. The second color is light blue, so that's changed from the rose that was there. The rose is still in the aura, but it's become less significant, perhaps, is the word I'd use. When it was the second color, it meant that you were very open to all sorts of stimuli, both conscious and unconscious, and that you'd be growing up, you'd go through phases where you would be at the mercy of all sorts of impulses that perhaps you pick up from other people, perhaps they originate from deep-seated wounds from previous incarnations. There is an interesting incarnation associated with the light blue that we'll talk about for a moment, and that is, I think, about the 4th or 5th century, where you are in a female body, you are the abbess of a small group of nuns, so you're the mother superior, if you like, of the small group of nuns in a colony actually, I thought at first it was Wales, but I think it's Ireland, because I can see you standing on the beach. And you are leading. You were very strict in those days, by the way. You fasted a lot, and you made all the other nuns fast as well. You got very thin, and that was exacerbated by the fact that you were trying to grow enough food to keep yourselves alive. And in that incarnation, you realized that your whole little group of nuns was going to die, so you took the big Bible that was there, was sort of a wooden cover, and it had a big sort of golden cross on it, and you went to the edge of the beach where the ocean was beating against the shore, and you asked God for a miracle. And I don't know what you quite expected, whether you expected the heavenly hand to come down and dish you up a banquet, but you walked into the ocean, and then a wave took you and you died, leaving your little group of nuns, most of, by the way, whom perished. So not the most not the most productive life, that one, but you would take a couple of lessons out of that, I think. One is that one does not eat by the hand of God alone, and we have to, in each incarnation, put the work in a physical, everyday, manual, down-to-earth sense, in order that our spiritual vocation may be able to manifest and grow within the world. I wonder where that group of nuns is now in your incarnation. I suspect that they might be somewhere around you. Perhaps they might be fellow staff members or people in the community with whom you'd be brought into contact, but have a difficult time creating relationships with them because they still hold a bit of a grudge against you. However, you are entering into that period of life where all those karmic imbalances will be brought into equilibrium. So the second colour now is light blue. Still light greens in the outer aura. So still connection there with rhythm, with growing things, with music, with singing. And I hope you can do lots of music with your students because you have a really beautiful rhythmic element that you could use within your teaching work. Perhaps you write poems or write songs, little songs for kids to sing, I'm not sure. But you should certainly use your voice as well. And of course, if you're teaching, you probably have a chance to use your voice and convey something of that soothing quality that is actually part of you. The light roses now are around the head, like a sort of a cloud. And the blues have moved out of the head, which is good. They have now become part of that second aura colour, and the head is, as I say, surrounded by these clouds of rose, so still capable of great intuition, strong psychic or clairvoyant impulses that come to you. The yellows descending from the vortex, coming also into the head now, which is good. It means that there's more thinking, more constructive use of the mind, not so idealistic. And actually, rose people can do very well with education, I've noticed. They're sensitive to the people around them. They may not be wildly ambitious. That comes more with browns within the aura. And I think you'll find that you're developing sort of a brownish tinge to the yellow as the years go on, the next couple of years go on. Which is really good because the brown gives the yellow, which is a bit abstract and a bit idealistic, more of a feet on the ground touch. And that's going to be very important in the years to come because I think you're going to be more and more involved in educational programs or social programs where you are setting goals and coming up with real down-to-earth solutions for different people. It's like you can work with people on a one-to-one basis and act as a mediator between, say, an external authority like a government and community and personal needs. And that brings us to the purples, which are strong from the shoulders. The hands, brown around the hands, which is really interesting, and brown around the feet. Browns indicate a hands-on approach when they're on the hands, so indicates to me that at this period in your life, this is a great time to be doing practical things with your hands, wood carving, writing, but not just writing sort of reports and analyses, writing things like instructions, I suppose, writing in an artistic way too, creating big letters and beautiful blocks of text, so that almost the writing becomes an art form. Interesting that you had an incarnation in their scenes about the first century, might have been earlier, but here you are in a male body and you wrote beautiful calligraphy. The surrounding colours, let's see, above the head, more light blue, so spiritual worlds haven't finished with you yet. Below the feet, greens, so that there's a continuing of the sort of restlessness and the movement that we see you engaged in. And perhaps you won't be long in Alice Springs. You might be there for a couple of years. Or it might be the starting point of the jumping off point, as it were, for something, a big new major development within the life. But you've certainly been called to Alice Springs for a reason. And the reason is very interesting. The place that you're at, Alice Springs, or to be more even more precise than that, the place we know as Uluru, is the centre of major spiritual forces which enter into the psyche of Australia. They enter in, so to speak, and they energize changes in the whole Australian soul. So how do Australians think of themselves? Well, it sort of depends, doesn't it? There is a lot of racism, conscious or unconscious, in the Australian psyche. There's a lot of selfishness. I'm all right, mate. There's a lack of compassion sometimes towards other souls, but at the same time there's a great warmth and a great ability to relate and to create links with others, no matter the culture or race. Now, if you can imagine that you're standing looking at Uluru, and above that there's something like a spear, a lance, if you like, of light. And in the middle of that stands the Archangel of Australia. And this is where the new spiritual forces enter into Australian consciousness. And one of the reasons that you're in Alice Springs is that, because of the proximity, that you will be able to identify more strongly with the Archangel of Australia, because your purpose in this incarnation has got a lot to do with taking the new spiritual forces and applying them, if you like, passing them on, sharing them with other souls. And what does the Archangel of Australia need to do at the moment? Well, first of all, it needs to fuse. There needs to be a fusion of the new with the old. And the rock, which is Uluru, and I won't use the old white fella's name, but the rock is in itself a place of tremendous spiritual energy. So the fusing of the light, the spirit of the Archangel, with the spirit of the Aboriginal First Nations ancestral consciousness is happening whether we wish it to or not. Now that will have, because it's such a powerful place, spiritually speaking, in Australia, that's going to have a sort of a difficult vibration, if you understand me, on the communities around it. And it's a shaking loose of both the white communities and the Aboriginal communities. It's a shaking apart. And so that Alice Springs, in many respects, although it's a community, it's like something that's fractured, and where there's been so much damage that it's as though a big explosion went off in that region. And there is what's left over from that explosion is the spiritual rubbish of anger, anguish, fragmentation, loss of identity, alienation, marginalization. This is the effect of the enormous energies that are being poured in there. And so the second reason that you might be in Alice Springs, first reason is that you will receive and be able to identify with the Archangel of Australia. The second reason is that in your time there, you will begin, in some people at least, a healing process, which I won't give the symbol of the oversoft just yet. Melody says, so I will. The symbol of the oversoft, which is the communication of the real self to the soul, shows you gathering up, sort of going around a big circle around this central fire and gathering up all sorts of rubbish from the ground, because the ground is littered with rubbish, and you're picking it up and you're putting it in this big basket, and you're going to make fertilizer out of it. And we all know what plants need to grow really well is good quality fertilizer. So you're going to have to use some of those quite negative energies around you and use them with the aim of transforming them into something that will create growth and create beauty in the lives of people. Let's go to the light blues for a moment again. And here we see an incarnation. This time you are in Wales, and it's about the 6th or 7th century. This time you're in a male body, and you are a storyteller, a bard, and you went from place to place singing with a little harp, and you would make up tales, or you would listen to the tales of the countryside and the legends and the stories, and you would tell the stories of the old culture. You kept the memories of the old alive. And the story that really was part of your being that you loved most was the story of the lady who, as a great blessing, gave a cup or a cauldron, not quite sure what it is, but I'll call it a cup. When I say it's a cup, it's not something you'd really drink from, but it's this huge thing like a cup, standing on a base. And from this came all sorts of bounty and food, fruits, life, so that it was the story of the bestowal of the gift of the goddess, Ceridwen, I think her name was then. And I think it may have been the Romans, but it was something like an invasion into Wales, probably from England. English were always invading Wales and trying to conquer the country. And that, in your mind, represented a terrible travesty, a terrible destruction of the old, because the old consciousness that you embraced was one of giving and one of being receptive, one of receiving what the spiritual worlds would give. And this new culture invades, and it's about control and rulership and territory and ownership. But you found one of the English leaders to be receptive, and so you brokered a peace between the English and the Welsh people. And this person became quite changed by his contact with the old spiritual values. Now, in a sense, this is actually the legend of Parzival, but it's the original archetype, if you like, which is the masculine consciousness coming to unite with the feminine consciousness. And if I return for a moment to the spiritual powers that work through the centre of Australia, the spiritual centre of Australia, that also is the power of Parzival, who's represented by the lance of the archangel, which penetrates into the earth at Uluru. And Uluru represents, is the feminine, the old, the receptive, the old wisdom, the old perceptions and concepts and consciousness, And again, here is a unity. Well, it's not a very good unity at the moment. It's more like a complete combat zone, a nuclear zone almost. It's all the power that's being released is having refracting effects into the Australian psyche and causing deep anxieties at present amongst many people, many who hold the old understanding of what it means to be an Australian, which is to own and to control and to dominate, all that, that's boiling up from the recesses of the Australian psyche at present because of this combat, the spiritual combat or spiritual, it's not really a combat, but the spiritual unification that is occurring. And it's going to take probably 20 years from this point in time, so I probably won't be here to see it, before the unification comes about and we see the development of a new culture within the Australian landscape of acceptance and valuing the perspective of different peoples. It's a unification that's coming about slowly, and it has come about since the beginning of the 20th century, but it's a very, very slow process which is being accelerated at the moment, which because of the acceleration and the extra energy is causing greater conflict in wider Australia. So your purpose or your connection with Parsifal, as I see it, is that you have his journey, that you have to get on that horse, which is the intellect, your thinking. You have to be a thinking person about this. You have to understand on the mental levels. You have to use the mind for communication. And you have to get on that horse, that thinking, communicative, concept creating. You're a very creative person. And your mission is to find that grail, which is the feminine that feminine symbol of the cup, which holds new life. It's from the feminine that new life arises, but it needs the help of the masculine in order to make that happen. So something new is being created, not just for Australia, but something new, which in the years to come will make Australia unique within the world, and it will make it a light in the darkness. Incarnation a long time ago, I would say about 30,000 years ago, you were in a female body here and you lived in what is now Northern Australia, but I think at that time it was probably connected to the islands, to Timor, there was a link going back to the Asian continent at that stage. And your people had lived in the top end, well, really around where Darwin is at the moment, and for about 1,000 years, but we're gradually moving moving to the south. And you were different society really from what it is today probably, but the peoples at that time, women were greatly revered, and you were revered as a sort of a priestess, a spirit traveller. We'll call you a spirit traveller, and you could go into spirit, and you could communicate with the spirits of the regions, and you could bring back information, news that would help people. You could tell them where the hunting was. You could tell them what was safe to eat and what would work. And so that gradually you were part of the growing tapestry of Aboriginal understanding. And then you went on a spirit journey with just a few other women. The men weren't even there. It was the women who were the explorers. And you travelled deep into Central Australia until you arrived at Uluru. And I think in those days there was probably a lot more water there than there is now. So you weren't journeying through arid desert. You had plenty of water. You had food on the way. And you were called to this place, and there you formed a connection with the spiritual beings that inhabited that region. And most of those beings now, they've gone, they've fallen asleep. You would perceive them as, say, an enormous crocodile or a great snake. And you had you developed an identity there with those spirits, and that's one of the reasons again why you've been called back to this place. But this time you're called back from the opposite consciousness, so to speak. The first time, that long ago life where you had that very spiritual existence, where you walked a lot in spirit, you had the connection with the native forces of the land, and now you've got the connection with the white, European, Western culture. And so it's time for these two to be fused, and if it's fused first in you, and in other people like you, there are people being called to Alice Springs and that region from all over Australia, in fact, all over the world, just in ones and twos. And you will meet some of these people in your time at Alice Springs. And you'll feel a bond because there's a shared purpose. And how are you going to feel more connected with your life? That's easy. It's just going to happen. You're in, as I said, a transition period. In a transition period, it's a bit as though you're walking on quicksand. Nothing feels very solid. You don't feel you can put down roots. You don't feel that you have a focus working there. But the soul doesn't care whether you feel connected to it or not, because you are connected. You can't get away from that connection. The soul is just getting you ready for the phase where it's going to come in and take charge, run the show. You might say, well, hasn't my soul been in charge all the time? Oh, no, No, it takes about 30 years for the soul to come in and say to the individual, okay, now you're all mine. We're going to move, and we're going to create our life, and we're going to fix up all the karmic stuff that we came into life to rebalance. And then your life is going to take off after about the age of 30, 31, 32. I'm not sure that you're going to stay in Alice Springs for a very long time, but I think what you get here is a fantastic launching pad. And then you have another question about the oath that you swore to serve Christ. Well, I have to say, Aaron, I really admire your courage, because if you swear an oath to serve Christ, Christ says, yep, you're mine. And that's it. You don't have to worry about it. Christ is in your very being, in the fibre of your soul, so to speak. And Christ will carry you through life. Where you are now, you're there because of Christ. Where you go after this, that will be because of Christ too. And I think that what we can do to help ourselves on this journey more and more is simply to be aware more and more that we are serving Christ, that you are in the service of Christ. When you meet people, you know that you're there as the ambassador of Christ. When you're teaching, you're there to pass on something from Christ. And I don't want to give you the wrong impression. I don't want you to stand up in front of a classroom and say to yourself, I am the ambassador of Christ here. No, that's just something that sits in the background as your knowledge. And of course, there are lots of things that you can do in terms of spiritual practice. But the best spiritual practices are those which are simple and which you do every single day and which are not a big burden on you. You don't have to go through big rituals or liturgies or sit in meditation for an hour. Forget all that. You get up in the morning, you say, good morning, Christ. I shall take you with me today. And then you walk out the door. Oh, after having had breakfast, presumably. Christ likes breakfast too, I've noticed. But Christ is there. Christ walks with you. Christ walks beside you. And Christ will make sure that you're going to fulfill that oath to the uttermost ends of this incarnation, so that every I and every T is dotted and crossed respectively. So you don't have to worry. That's happening. And if you have the time on your hands and you have the courage to do this, you can always do our Wise Art course, because that is all about, first of all, connecting with self. And secondly, it's about connecting with Christ. It's a catalyst course. It makes you more who you are. And you may feel the need for something like that within your life over the next few years, because you are living a life of transformation, and that's often painful for the person. But when you understand that this is your life, that your life is to change and keep changing, then the reward for that is a joy that opens up within you, like the overflowing chalice of the grail of the great goddess, that it opens up for you. And of course, the grail was transformed by the Christ impulse into the vessel that carries the blood of Christ. But the blood of Christ is what gives life to the earth. So it's the new life. And that's the whole meaning, in a sense, of the story of Percival, the knight of grace, that through grace we change the old into the new. The influencing colours, the beautiful blues overhead, you are getting more and more in touch with spirit as time goes on. And that will mean that you'll be able to live in a spiritual consciousness, but have your feet also firmly on the ground. The greens underneath the feet, that this is an incarnation of healing. And the greatest healers are those who have been healed themselves. So that as this life progresses, there is an increasing coming together of those strands, the pain that's within your soul, the joy that's within your soul, the fractures and the consensus and the unity that's there as well. And that's another reason, by the way, why you're in Alice Springs, because the fracture and the lack of cohesion that is in that community is a reflection of where you're starting from. But just as that community is gradually going to come together and heal in the years to come, so will you. And when you have that healing taking place, as it is, has been, of course, for the last 7 years especially, but more and more powerfully, and healing never stops for us, we can always become more whole, more healed. The more we are healed, the more we can heal others. And that brings me to the symbol of the over-self, which shows you gathering all this rubbish off the ground round this beautiful fire, and you're going to make something of beauty from the rubbish. From all that's been discarded, you will grow beautiful flowers. And you will, I think, fulfill that name, that purpose, which is standing strongly before me at this time, the gardener. Because the world is your garden, and particularly the consciousness of Australia is your garden. And in this time of darkness around the world, impinging upon us, what we need is beauty and healing. And if you can bring those into this world, that would be a great task. So shall it be.